Welcome, everyone. If you have interest in hearing from a guy who grew up in Minnesota, snowboarding and wake skating, and then teamed up with his high school friend who went pro as a snowboarder, you are going to want to hear from Mike Roeder. It's not every day that you actually get to build a highly successful business with your buddy from high school. These guys are great Midwest guys that are getting it done. They have 7 syndication deals for 700 plus units on the books, and they are going strong. Before we jump into the intro, if you are enjoying the podcast and have not provided a review thus far, please take a moment of your time and go onto the show on Apple Podcasts and click subscribe and check the 5-star button, the star furthest to the right. Why does it matter? Think about when you have a choice between trying 2 different podcasts. Almost always, you will choose the one with the greatest number and the most positive reviews. I thank you in advance. Now, on to the intro.
Welcome to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing. Be introduced to the players that are getting it done and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darren Batchelder.
A little background on Mike Roeder before we start the show. Mike lives in Minnesota with his wife and 2 children. He grew up snowboarding and wake skating. Both he and his business partner moved to Utah to go after snowboarding as a profession. Mike decided it was not his path and moved back to Minnesota and started investing in single-family real estate. Dan Breezy, his business partner, continued on the professional snowboard path, and then they decided to come together and go after multifamily. They started with an 8-unit and a 20-unit deal, and then started on the syndication path, and they have 7 syndications and over 700-plus units under their belt. And they have a ton of running room ahead. Now, on to the show. Hello, everyone. Today, we've got another special guest here with us today. We've got Mike Roeder. Mike, appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me on the show, Darren. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So the way Mike and I know each other, we actually are part of the same multifamily mentorship group. And it probably goes back, I joined the group 3 years ago, and it probably goes back close to 3 years ago when we came for an event. I live in the Dallas area. The event was in Dallas, and Mike lives out of state, and we'll talk about that. He came in, and we met the night before for a little kind of happy hour, and just a really, really good guy. And I actually had his partner, Dan Breezy, on as episode number 4. And 2 great guys, and looking forward to hearing what they have going on and go from there. So thanks again. Just to start out with, how many properties and how many units do you guys invested in?
Yeah, so we're general partners on 764 units, and that's a total of 7 different assets. And it scales across 4 different states. We own in Minnesota, Wisconsin, New Mexico, and then also Texas down where you live.
Minnesota, Wisconsin, New Mexico, and Texas. So that's crazy. 7 deals, 7 syndication deals. That's, man, when we met, you had 0.
Yeah. And it's, it's been a wild ride over the last 3.5 years or so. And it's just been a phenomenal space to be in. I mean, obviously a very competitive space in the multifamily industry, but we've really enjoyed it. And, we'll talk a little bit more about, Dan and myself partnering, but that's been instrumental to our success.
Yeah. So one of the things that I was thinking about before doing the show was the saying, good guys finish last. And I'm like, this is like just the opposite of that. These 2 guys are like just 2 good Midwest guys, and they're killing it. So, Dan is a ex-professional snowboarder, and you're definitely an outdoors guy too. help the listeners understand how you guys came together.
Yeah, so Dan and I have known each other since high school, really. We grew up snowboarding together. Actually, we both moved out to Salt Lake City. I lived with Dan for a year, and we were both pursuing professional snowboard careers. And Dan obviously went on to become a professional snowboarder. I decided that it wasn't quite right for me and didn't quite have that skill set to get to that level. And so I moved back to Minnesota, kept going for my college degree, and finished up with an undergraduate degree from St. Cloud State University, which is a small school in a small town in Minnesota. And other than that, I had been buying single family rental properties in central Minnesota. And Dan, because of his higher income due to his professional snowboarding career, he was looking for a way to offset his taxable income and to build up his passive income so that way he'd be set when his snowboard career was done. So he had started buying mid-size apartment complexes, anywhere from 20 to 30 units. And we had talked on the daily and just decided that, hey, let's partner together. Let's buy an apartment complex together and see how it goes. So Dan and I partnered up, pooled our money together. We brought in one other friend as well. And we bought a 20 unit together. We bought an 8 unit together. And after that, we really decided that, hey, let's scale this business. Let's jump into the syndication route.
Awesome. So you did single family first. Dan wasn't doing single family. And then you guys came together and you did the 20 unit, 8 unit, all with your own capital with a third partner. And then Correct. From there, you guys really saw the value in multifamily and decided to grow it and scale it from there.
Exactly. I mean, we were really enjoying the cash flow that, the 20 unit and the 8 unit was, pumping out. And we had a lot of, friends and family that were asking us, how can we get involved? And we just decided, hey, let's go the syndication route so we can really scale our business and help other people, get a good solid return on their money as well. Because I think, there's a lot of people out there that don't have access to syndicators like you and I that are putting together projects. And it's just such a phenomenal way to build your wealth and build your passive income that, there's a lot of excitement when people actually learn about it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I'm shocked that I talk to people all the time. I'm like, how is this like kept a secret? Right. 47 years, I'm 50 now, but 47 years, I didn't have one person invite me into one of these deals. And yeah. I read the Wall Street Journal. I read all the financial, publications. They just don't talk about it. It's like, but then once you get into the world, I'm sure your email box is full of deals like mine is. But it's like until you get into that world, you don't get the invite.
Exactly. It's really a hidden industry unless you're actually networking with the people that are inside the industry. And it's a powerful one too. It's a powerful industry and a powerful investment asset class to be in.
That's awesome. So you mentioned friends and family kind of prompted you, how can you get involved? And that probably, it sounds like helped push you guys along into the syndication space. A lot of people, they do either single family and then they get into large scale multifamily or whatever, but it's more coming from the focus of, hey, how do I scale this? How do I, make more money off of each deal? Mm-hmm. How do I leverage other people's money and time and effort and that sort of thing? But for you guys, you already had people that were prompting you, hey, how do I get involved? That's awesome.
Exactly. Yeah, that was powerful. And, I would say it was a combination too. Dan and I wanted to, do more with multifamily. And, at a certain point, you can buy your own deals, but you're likely going to run out of liquidity. And, these banks or lenders are wanting your net worth to be at a certain level, your liquidity to be at a certain level. And then you need to, pay the down payment and, the escrow and whatnot. So you have to take that into effect as well. And that helps.
So syndication is, again, talking about like this small world. And if you're outside, if you're listening to this for the first time, people are like, sounds like a complicated word. It sounds like that's for somebody else. It's too complex. Explain syndication in a nutshell.
Yeah. So syndication is really, you have a group of individuals or an individual that's finding the deal. They're putting together the team, they're implementing the business plan, And then you're bringing in a group of limited partners or passive investors that are going to fund the project or most of the project for you. So you have, you know, two different class shares. You have class A and class B. One set of class of the shares is for those limited partners and one set is for the sponsor or the general partner.
Absolutely. So it's just a group of people coming together to buy an asset that they couldn't buy on their own. So exactly. It's a win-win scenario. And, you know, again, I wish I had known about it before. But so now you start going down the syndication route, doing seven deals. How much equity have you guys raised?
Yes, I don't have a specified amount, but, you know, I would say around
ballpark
that
range.
20, low 20 million range.
So 20 million, I'm guessing that 20 million wasn't all from friends and family.
It was not. No, it's, you know, you put in a lot of work networking. Networking is really where it's at as far as being able to raise capital. So, you know, Dan and I, over the last 3.5 years, we've really taken every opportunity that we could get to get to, you know, mentorship meetups, lending meetups, local meetups. We started our podcast. So there's a lot of different avenues that we've taken to really build up our database. And that's allowed us to eventually, you know, scale our business.
Awesome. So you mentioned the podcast. Talk about the podcast. So, you know, why did you start a podcast? Who's it geared for? You know, what are your goals with it?
Yeah, so our podcast is called The Keeping It Real Estate Show, and it's strictly focused in on real estate investing. We started it back a few months ago, and we're about 15 episodes in. You know, our goals with our podcast, we have a couple of goals. So first off, to educate investors that are looking to get into the game, whether it be a general partner looking to do their own deal or syndicated deal, or passive investors that are just looking to learn more about the industry. We also started the podcast to grow our database as well and to allow other individuals to really get to know us. You know, when you jump into the multifamily space and you have limited partners entrusting you with their money, it's really about trust and how well they know you, if they like you. That goes so far, and I just can't speak highly enough about that.
Yeah, so those are some of the same reasons I started. You know, I wanted to get the word out. You know, I hadn't heard about doing this until 3 years ago. And so with the podcast, my goal is to get the word out to more people and educate them and hopefully bring people in that want to invest with either me on a deal or with one of my guests that come in. So, and then the last thing is I just, you know, I'm 50. I'm like, I want to inspire people to, you know, yep, to get up, to take a chance in life. Like when you get on the other side. So I've started a business back in 2007 and I was scared to start my own business, you know, leaving corporate America when everybody has trained you to say that's what you should be doing. And that's the safest place to be. You know, it's scary to take that chance, but I did it in 2007 and I'm so glad I did. And then with the real estate side, I was scared to get in the real estate side. I remember the first purchase I made 3 years ago was a little duplex and I was scared doing that duplex. And then when I joined the multifamily mentorship group, I started meeting all these people that were doing 100 plus unit deals, 200 plus, 300 plus, and they were on their third, fourth, fifth deal. And I was like, holy cow, how do they do this? And then I just realized they're people just like everybody else. And like, they just learned the process and what they had to do. And so I kind of just followed them. And now it's awesome watching you guys do the same thing.
Appreciate that. And that's, you know, I think that's really important that you mentioned that, is just surrounding yourself with the right people. You know, if you surround yourself with people that have been successful at what you're looking to do and you take action and kind of copy what they're doing, I mean, you're going to find success in what you're doing, guaranteed.
Yeah, that's huge. You said a few things there. One is take action. I mean, at some point, there's, you know, look, everybody's got to get educated, right? Whether you're yep, a passive investor getting in your first deal, whether you're buying a duplex for the first time, or whether you're, you know, trying to syndicate your first deal, you have to get educated. But at some point, you got to pull the trigger. And, you know, talk about that, like you're the fear associated with actually, you know, pulling the trigger on your first large syndication or even one of your, you know, your 8 unit and 20 unit. I mean, it's scary when you're first getting going. So talk about that fear.
It really is. And, you know, fear can really paralyze you and, you know, prevent you from taking action. And I think what you need to do is consider the worst case scenario. So if you're buying, you know, a 50 or 100 unit property, what's the worst case scenario that's going to happen? And what's the likelihood of that actually happening? And when you actually dig in and, you know, figure out those two items, you know, you're likely going to find out, hey, the worst case scenario is probably a pretty good scenario. And, you know, I would say just take calculated risks. So do your homework, get your education, and just know what you're getting into before you jump into a multifamily deal.
That, you know, it's so funny how so many guests answer that the same way. Like, what's the worst thing that can happen? Mm-hmm. And then when people realize, they're like, all right, well, I could live with that. If that's the worst thing that happens, I could live with that. And then you talked about what's the likelihood of that happening. And, you know, mostly if you're going to pull the trigger, you're probably thinking that it's a low probability that that worst case mm-hmm. scenario is going to come through. And then you didn't talk about this, but I know that other guests have talked about, well, what's the upside? Okay, well, the upside is so much better, you know, than the downside. So, you know, take the risk. And some people can't get over that hump. And one way to help you get over that hump is by surrounding yourself with other people that have already done it, right?
Exactly. And I think, you know, if you can bring on a team member or multiple team members that have, you know, done a syndication or bought a duplex or whatever you're looking to do, I mean, that's just going to give you that much more comfort. You can bounce ideas off of them. You can talk about, you know, the worst case and the best case scenarios, you know, what their track record's like. And, you know, it's just going to help you tremendously. And I'd like to talk a little bit about Dan and my partnership. I mean, it's been instrumental to have that business partner, not only to bounce ideas off of each other and to have a second set of eyes on each property that we acquire, but also to motivate each other. I mean, if you have a partner and you jive well with them, you know, that can really be a huge portion of your motivation from day to day.
That's a great point. I mean, in this business, you really have to have self-determination and persistence to win deals. And, you know, having a partner, I don't know, you can liken it to, you know, if you've ever had a gym partner, right, where you're meeting at the gym at a certain time, all of us have gone through those days where we don't want to work out, right? We want to hit snooze. And
that's right.
if you have that partner that you know is going to be showing up at the gym at 5:30 a.m., you're like, I don't want to let him down. So I'm going to get my butt out of bed and I'm going to make it over there. And so the same thing holds true on the real estate side. If you have a business partner that you can bounce things off of and hold each other accountable, that, you know, just helps both of you progress forward.
Exactly. Couldn't agree more.
So it's very cool that you guys knew each other in high school, though. I mean, it's like part of you guys have to be sometimes like having a beer on the side and just kind of laughing that, look what we've done. You know, like we did the snowboard thing and I didn't even know that you went out to Salt Lake City with him. I knew that he went out there, but I didn't know you went with him. And, you know, so you both go out for the snowboarding thing. He takes it a little further. And then you guys follow through and get into the business world and now have 7 deals and over 700 units. And you guys must laugh and, you know, can you believe that we're doing this, man?
It is kind of unbelievable. You know, it's fun to look back and see where we were before and where we're at now. And, you know, it's also fun to think about the future and what it's going to evolve into over the next, you know, 10, 20 years. I mean, I see myself doing this until I'm 50, 60 years old at least. And, you know, it's
hey, you better move that number up. I'm 50 now. So I feel like I've still got a long runway.
And, oh, yeah. No, it's an industry you can do until you're, you know, 80, 90 years old. So,
better numbers.
You got 40 more years, Darren.
There you go. Better numbers. So talk about mindset because, you know, when you're doing single family, and a lot of people, when I've talked, you know, they started in single family, and that first single family was scary. And then, you know, by doing that, you've kind of, not, I don't want to say master it, but you understand the process and you understand that there actually is a positive return on the other side of it. And so then your mind starts going to, all right, what's next? What's the next challenge? And so, you know, going from single family to 8 and 20 unit, you know, you had to have a mindset shift. And then going, you know, into syndication, that's another shift. And then wanting to continue to blow it out is another one. Like, so talk about mindset and how you keep kind of up in the ante.
Yep. So first off, you know, my mindset really changed when I started talking to Dan about his apartments that he was buying. So I was buying single families, you know, one or two a year, and just planned on doing that until I got up to about 100 properties. That was my original goal. And, you know, when I had been talking to Dan about his apartments that he had been buying, you know, he had really said, why don't we partner up? Why don't you, you know, partner up and we can buy something bigger? And at first I really didn't get it. I kind of almost told him, hey, does it really make sense to, you know, complicate things, get more partners involved when I can do this on my own? And, you know, the more we discussed, the more it really made sense. And so it really changed my mindset into thinking, you know, a little bit about the abundance mindset, but also, you know, it's going to be better if we have more eyes, more minds working on these projects. And, you know, when we jumped into the syndication spot, same thing happened. We came down, you know, to the Brad Sumrock event that he had put on DFW where we met. And you have these conversations with all these investors that are doing bigger, larger deals, and they've already changed their mindset. And so it really starts to wear on you and start to change your mindset. And, you know, I would say after the first couple of days that we were around all those individuals, our minds really shifted to, hey, we can really do this. Like you said before, these are just people. They're people that have, you know, put actions into place and, you know, they've learned what they needed to learn and they're doing it. So why can't we?
Right. Why can't I? Right. Right. What you look across the room, but if you don't put yourself in that room and see those other people, you know, you're probably going to have that self-doubt. And you're surrounded by friends and family that haven't done it. They're probably going to say you're crazy. That's for somebody else. So getting yourself surrounded by other people that have been successful is so key, so key, so key. On that note, like, you guys decided to partner together. On your first syndication, did you bring an experienced person on, or did you just kind of leverage? All right, Dan had some smaller multifamily, and this is going to be our largest one.
Yeah, so we did not bring a more experienced sponsor on to our first deal. It was just Dan and I. However, it was a smaller deal. It was a 45 unit property located in Western Wisconsin, and you know, we really leveraged the connections that we had through the group that we are a part of down in DFW. You know, just to make sure that we were underwriting properly and we were selecting the right team and doing all the due diligence up front to make it a success. And, you know, crazy enough, that first syndication project has been an absolute home run. It's been one of our best projects we've ever done.
How do you define a home run?
Well, a home run, you know, we're actually refinancing the project right now. It's been a little over 2 years since we acquired the property. And, you know, we should be able to kick back 150% of the investor's capital, and it'll still, you know, cash flow really nicely. So it's exciting.
Somebody invests $100,000 into that deal. You're going to do a cash out refi, give them back their 100,000 plus another 150,000.
Plus another 50,000.
So they get their 100,000 back plus 50,000, and they still have the same ownership percentage in the deal.
Exactly. They still have that same ownership percentage. So it's, you know, long-term passive income, plus it's tax-free wealth. I mean, when you refinance a deal, and I think some people don't understand this that aren't in the industry, you know, those funds coming back to you, you typically don't have to pay taxes on them, you know, until you sell the asset down the line, which is just phenomenal.
That's huge. So 100,000, you get 50,000 on top of that, and you don't pay tax on it because it's just a cash out refi.
Exactly. Yep. And those are rough numbers, but that's what we expect. So we're pretty excited.
I mean, that is awesome. Awesome. Congratulations. Yeah. And I wish I was in that deal. I've seen pictures of that deal, and you guys did an awesome job. But they get some serious snow there, though. I've seen some pictures of that property, but it's just covered, man. So
exactly. And you got a budget for that up here, you know, Minnesota and in the Midwest. It's like you got to take snow removal into account. And, you know, that deal, we walked into it and it was kind of a trifecta. I mean, the rents were super low, the expenses were extremely high, and there was a lot of deferred maintenance. So it wasn't attracting the right tenant base. But at the same time, it was in just a phenomenal location. And those are a few aspects that we look at when we're looking at deals today and how we looked at deals back then too.
That's awesome. So one of the things in terms of moving on to bigger stuff is the word leverage, right? Is you're able to leverage a lot more. So what does that mean? You're leveraging the bank to get a loan, you know, 70 to 80% loan to value, you're leveraging now other people's money, and that, you know, has a huge impact. And then you're leveraging having on-site management. So, you know, hiring a third-party property management company and having them manage the day-to-day and all the leases and hiring employees and the maintenance. And so you're able to really scale much better by going down the multifamily route. I was never in single family. And you said you had a goal of getting to 100. I've talked to a lot of people that were in single family before, and they've told me kind of, and I don't know if this number is right, but when they get to like 15, 20, it starts to become very difficult to manage.
Yeah. And I only had a handful, so I wasn't even up to, you know, 15 single family homes, but you know, I was managing them all, self-managing them myself. And I can tell you this, and same things with apartments is, you know, if you have a really good tenant, it's very easy to manage a property. When you have a bad tenant, it's very tough. And so we had a couple bad tenants, and man, it took up a lot of time and was a lot of stress. And, you know, I liked how you mentioned you can leverage management companies. You can have an on-site manager and a third-party management company managing these larger apartment complexes. And that can take a ton of stress off your plate. And it can give you a lot of your time back as well. So that's what we do. We have all of our deals third-party managed. You know, there's always that option to start your own management company, but I think you have to think long and hard about doing that and make sure that it's the right play.
Right, exactly. And you already have to, it seems like people that look into that kind of get over the, this is just general, but 1,000 units or more before they really start, you know, considering, should I take property management back in-house? But, you know, to give the listeners some perspective, you know, that little duplex that my wife and I bought, you know, we put $50,000 into that deal and then got a loan, and it was a bank loan and full recourse. And then on the 76 unit deal that we syndicated, you know, that was a $6 million purchase, and we put $100,000 into that deal. You know, when the duplex was like a $290,000 purchase. So it's like you really can leverage your capital much, much better. Another thing is that, you know, people bring different skill sets to the table and have different roles in partnerships. Talk about the roles that you and Dan play. Do you guys both do the same thing and just watch over each other's shoulder, or do you focus in one area and he focuses in another?
Yeah, so that's a great question. You know, we both have a similar role in our organization. So we're both, you know, looking over deals, asset managing. We're on our weekly phone calls with our third-party management companies. We are both networking. However, I can say that I really focus a lot of my efforts on creating systems, so systematizing our business so that way we can scale to where we want to be. And also, you know, the more systems that you put in place that are working effectively, the more success you're going to have at your properties. So that's something I really focus in on. And then Dan, he really excels at creating relationships with other people, whether it be our management company, limited partners, brokers, you know, that are selling the deals. That's extremely crucial. So he's phenomenal at that. So I would say those are two of our skill sets that really complement each other, truthfully.
That's awesome. So you are the process guy.
Exactly. I enjoy it. You know, I think my whole life, you know, I've been successful because I'm always looking for different efficiencies in whatever I'm doing. And it's something that's fun for me. You know, I thrive when I'm looking for those efficiencies.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So let's go back. I mean, you guys got together in high school. Let's talk about your childhood a bit. Do you have brothers, sisters? Do you grow up in Minnesota? You know, parents, rich, poor, middle class, entrepreneurs, W-2?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, I grew up, I have one younger brother, and he's actually been integrated into our business. So he's part-time real estate analyst. So he's analyzing a lot of our deals and, you know, doing that while he has his full-time gig. I have a younger sister that's 12 years younger than me, and then an older sister as well. Grew up in a middle-class family. So we, you know, my parents did well, but, you know, we weren't wealthy by any means. And, you know, I think when I was growing up, I was really fascinated by sales and just trying to make money when I was young. I mean, even as young as 7, 8 years old, I was always trying to sell stuff to my brother or my siblings or neighbors or whatnot. And it's funny because at age 12, I got a job at the local strawberry farm of all places. And so I would bike to Clearwater, you know, it was about 4 or 5 miles away, 12 years old, biking by myself.
Wow.
Get to the strawberry
farm. Those were
farm.
Different times. I remember biking exactly. All over town too. Like, I can't imagine no. Letting our kids do that now, but that's what we did, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, I'd bike to work in the summer and, you know, we'd pick strawberries all day long. And there was, I don't know, probably 15 kids or so that were picking strawberries, and they actually paid us by how many baskets of berries we could pick per day. So that really, you know, motivated me as well. And I was actually their top picker, so to speak. And so nice. I think it started out at an early age that I was motivated and, you know, persistent. I think that's really played into my success.
Awesome. So can you think back to a time when you were a kid that you actually thought to yourself, I'm going to be successful?
Yeah. I mean,
what did that look like?
I think I was about 16 years old, and I remember telling my mom, I'm going to be wealthy or rich or whatever word I used. And
right.
It's just something that I believed, and I still do believe that. And it's just, I don't know where that came from. You know, my parents both did well. My mom owned an insurance agency, so she had a little bit of that entrepreneurship blood in her. But it's just something that I just kind of had in my blood early on.
That's awesome. I don't think it's like a firm requirement, but I think, you know, I do think that you have to have some kind of belief in yourself and, mm-hmm. and drive that you can get there. It's not easy, folks. Like, all these things are, it's very doable and you can learn from other people, but it's not like people come just knock on your door and hand it to you. You gotta go out there and hustle and make it happen.
Exactly. So, yeah. And that mindset is so crucial. And, you know, I think kids aren't taught that you can change your mindset. You know, if you surround yourself with the right people and you put the right information in front of you, if you continuously do that, you're going to change your mindset. And I really wish that, you know, parents and schools would focus more on that.
I agree. Maybe it was a month or two ago, we went to, you know, with COVID, everything, all sports is, you know, not too many fans at the stadiums, but there was a baseball playoff game here in Dallas. My son was back from college. And so my son and I and another father and his son, who's also in college, the four of us went to the game. Well, we're eating dinner before the game, and my friend's son is into trading baseball cards. So he buys baseball cards, you know, and then sells them for a profit. And he's making really good money for a kid. I mean, very good money for a kid. When I say kid, college student. But he said, this is what's interesting, and it plays back to, you know, real estate and anything else in life. He said, I've got a lot of other kids that come up to me and say, how do you do it? You know, teach me how to do it. And he says, I'm happy to. And he starts to tell them, and then nobody will do the work. Like, so he tells them what to do and they're like, well, I don't want to do that. Like, that's, you know, that's work, you know?
Yep.
and so it's funny. Like, you know, you really have to have drive and belief in yourself, I believe.
You do. Yeah. And that's funny. I mean, you're wanting to learn from someone and do what they're doing. I mean, take action. That's just phenomenal that young child or young, you know, adult is giving, you know, that advice to other people. And I just wish more people would take action when they hear advice like that.
I completely, completely agree. So I saw a really cool video that you guys put out. It was just a fun video. It was like, you had talked to me about, you probably know which one I'm talking about. You were in the back of some farm or something. There's like a pond or a mini lake or something. And you've got all these cool tricked out things and you're like scurfing or something overall. Like, talk about, what do you call that thing? You had a weird name for it. And
yeah.
And where is that? And what do you do? And I mean, I just think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So we're, you know, our family is huge into water sports. You know, my family had bought a cabin when I was, oh gosh, probably 3 years old or so. And so I've been doing water sports ever since three. I started kneeboarding when I was 3 years old and have just kind of continued that passion. But what you're talking about is wake skating. So it's similar to a skateboard on water.
Okay. Wake skating.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, I got big into that. I rode for a handful of companies, just got free product. I wasn't getting paid, but it was a blast. We did a lot of filming and just had a lot of fun with it.
That's awesome. Now, is that in your backyard?
Is not. I'm not quite sure what video you're talking about. There's quite a few out there, but.
Okay. Maybe there was a red barn or something. I don't know.
Yeah. So that was in Chautauqua, Wisconsin. It was a gentleman that owned a filming company and he invited us up there and. Yep, did a bunch of wake skating. But we live on the lake now and we, you know what, we get the girls, our daughters out there all the time and it's a blast.
Yeah, your youngest is how old?
She's 5. So we have a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old.
And you must have started her like 6 months old. I'm probably exaggerating, but like you, I've seen pictures and videos where she's out there like on the board with you, like the two of you out there like, she was like young.
Yeah. So crazy enough. She was born June 17th, our first daughter, and I had her out on the water, late August. So she was like two and a half months old. And I was carrying her out there on the wake skate. And
wow,
you know, it's funny. A lot of people look at that and they're like, oh my gosh, that's so dangerous. Why are you doing that? Well, you know, you have to understand that sport is like walking to me. I've done it so much and, you know, I have so much control. And I think that goes into other industries too, you know, multifamily or whatever you're doing. If you do it enough, you know, it becomes more safe, more and more safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Like a lot of people that I've interviewed, like the first duplex or the first multifamily or the first single family was their scariest. And then now they're buying 10 and 20 and $40 million deals. And they're just like, you know, they understand the process and they understand how to evaluate it. So they're not scared anywhere near. I'm sure that there's still some fear that, you know, maybe you're buying at the top market, who knows, but like, there's not that fear that I don't know what I'm doing, you know,
exactly.
You've done it before.
Exactly. And the more and more that you can do that and, you know, fine tune your processes, you know, the more comfortable you're going to be and the more success you're going to have.
So talk about buying from out of state. So because that I think is something that a lot of people are interested in. Look, you know, you hear you want to buy in, you know, states that are, you know, have population growth and have income growth. And, you know, so Texas and Arizona and Florida and the Carolinas, you know, they seem attractive, you know, from that perspective because population is growing. But what if you live outside of that state, but you want to buy in that state? You know, that can be nerve-wracking in itself. And so how did you guys get over that hump? Because Dan is where's Dan?
So Dan's out in Washington. He grew up in Minnesota, but he's out in Washington state now. And, you know, we don't own anything in Washington. We own a handful of properties in Minnesota where I'm at. But like you said, we also have properties in Texas. We have one in New Mexico as well. And I think when you're buying out of state, which you should definitely consider because not all states are landlord friendly or have the population or job growth. So you really need to look at what market is going to be a good market to invest in. After you figure that out, you really need to implement systems, you know, in your business. So that way your property isn't being overlooked by your management team. So I can kind of speak on a few things that we've done over the past few years that have really allowed us to successfully invest out of state.
That'd be huge.
You know, I think the first crucial thing, if you can, is try to find someone that's boots on the ground. And you don't necessarily have to bring them on as a general partner. You can find people that are up and coming that are looking to learn from your experience. And, someone that's in the market that might be able to go drive the property on a biweekly or a monthly basis and, take videos, take photos for you, talk to the management company, look at the rehabbed units, see how the work is being done, see if the property is being landscaped properly, if there's garbage around. And so if you can find someone to partner up with that's boots on the ground, that's instrumental. For instance, like our New Mexico property, there's been a 2-week quarantine, I believe, ever since COVID started. So if we go into that state, if we fly in, we're stuck there for a couple of weeks.
Oh, wow.
So we actually found a lady that's in the same mentorship group as us, and she lives in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and she's driving to that property once a month for us and is just, super excited about it because she can learn from our experience, wow, which has just been phenomenal.
I haven't heard anybody else bring that up, and I think that is such a good opportunity. And again, it's a win-win because, when you get into this space, I know I had it when I was a passive and I was trying to find my first, every sponsor I invested in, I was like, hey, I want to learn, include me in as much as you can. And they're all like, yeah, Darren, man, I'll help you learn. But then they get bogged down, they're the lead sponsor. They're just trying to implement the business plan and, they having to bring a bunch of people on to teach, is not something that they were really, had the drive to do, and not only the drive, but they were just busy. And so then I saw it when I took over my property. I had the same thing. I had passive investors say, "Hey, Darren, this is my first passive deal. Can you bring me out to meetings? Can you do this? Can you do that?" And I didn't. Because the same thing. I was like, I'm focused on trying to get the returns and manage the deal. And, but in this scenario that you're talking about, it's really a trade-off. Like you're getting something for it because you can't be there. And then the other person is getting something from it because they're like, hey man, this is what I saw. What do we do? And then you guys all huddle, the three of you, and you come up with a game plan on what to do next. And then that person learns from that. That's fantastic.
Exactly. Yeah. And it has to be win-win for everyone. And, I feel like that's what we've, put together with the people that we've co-sponsored with or brought on as, people with boots on the ground. A couple other things that we've done for our out-of-state properties is we've installed cameras. So we have cameras in the office, sometimes around the property so we can see, if there's garbage floating around the property, how the on-site is doing, and so on. Weekly calls with management, regardless if you're out of state or in state where you're investing, you really need to have a weekly call with your management company. Once you get a year or two into the property, you should be able to scale that down, maybe do a bi-weekly or monthly eventually if you have that trust. But you need to be in front of that management company overseeing what they're doing because they have a lot going on as well. And if you're not touching base, your property can definitely slip quickly. So
yeah, that's a huge point. So both you and Dan are big family guys. I mean, family is important to both of you. Have you incorporated the family into the business at all? You mentioned your brother is doing some stuff.
So my brother is doing some stuff. My wife's very supportive, not really looking to get into the multifamily space, but she'll help us with, editing. She used to be a photographer, weddings and portraits. And so she'll help us a lot with our media. And then we've, integrated my 8-year-old as well. So I did, a podcast with her.
Did you really? That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. She talked a little bit about her candy machine business and mindset and so on. And,
nice.
It was a lot of fun. And, I brought her to property tours and, we were starting a lesson on mindset that Dan actually put together for his son. So we did a lesson yesterday and, just trying to get him more, ingrained into the multifamily or into the entrepreneurship business.
That's so cool. So you said your wife is supportive. I, I think that can be overlooked many times. You know, there's, even if you're looking to invest passively, you know, the, you know, it's your first passive deal and the minimum investment, you know, kind of ranges typically 50 grand, you know, some of the larger deals, 75 or $100,000 minimums. Some of the smaller ones, maybe 25,000, but most deals that I've seen are 50,000 and up. And, you know, if one or the other spouse is very interested in this business and wanting to do a passive deal, but the other person doesn't spend any time getting comfortable with it, you know, that may be a big hurdle to, hey, honey, or, you know, I'm going to, you know, wire 50 grand tomorrow to into this investment. You know, so having a supportive spouse is key on the general partnership side, and also, you know, even at, on the passive side.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, something that I did right off the bat when we got really involved in multifamily is, you know, I brought my wife down to a couple networking events down in Texas, and, you know, she really warmed up to the idea. I think she would have been supportive regardless. It's just who she is. But, you know, I think if you're a limited partner and your spouse is kind of so-so on the idea of investing, you know, bring them to some networking events, get some podcasts in front of them, and let them learn a little bit, because once they learn about it, most likely they are going to be supportive.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's huge.
It is. It is. And I think, you know, if you're in the general partnership position, having a supportive spouse, as far as how much time you're sticking into the business, is crucial as well. I mean, Darren, you know, that when you have a deal under contract, I mean, it's go time. You have a lot of time that you need to stick into that deal. And, you know, I mean, obviously your family can, I don't like to say it, but be put in the back seat for, you know, a couple weeks or a month if you need them to. And as long as you have that support there and you're trying to balance it as best as you can, that can really make life a lot easier.
That's great. So do you still work in a W-2 job, or are you full-time real estate?
Yeah, good question. And it's kind of hard to answer that. So I am a full-time real estate investor. You know, I would say I put 50 plus hours a week into real estate investing. But I do have the opportunity to still do a little bit of high net worth insurance sales for the clients that I've serviced over the past. So I still do that a bit as well.
Well, that is complimentary too. If you're you know, clientele or high net worth individuals, you can talk to them about both opportunities.
Exactly.
Insurance,
you know, really
and
feeds
also
into one another.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And also, well, we won't go down that path to, you know, now, but there are advantages of using certain type of insurance products to really be your own bank and use that for real estate deals too. So you can talk about all those things, which is pretty cool.
Exactly. Yeah. It's been phenomenal. I've been in the insurance industry for 12 years or so. Like I had mentioned, my mom was in it before myself, so that's what got me into it, but it's been great.
All right. So you may not have the numbers handy, but in the back of your head, you probably have this. You raised $20 million worth of equity. Where did the passive investors come from? So what percentage family, friends, what percentage personal network, which I would kind of classify some, you know, your insurance contacts, and then what percentage, you know, from multifamily mentorship groups and going to, you know, kind of multifamily oriented type of events?
Yeah, great question. And, you know, I don't have the exact percentages, but I would say, you know, maybe 30% or so comes from the networking groups that are mentorship groups that we're a part of. And then I would say a good, you know, 40 to 50% comes from outside sources. And that can be, you know, friends, family, family offices, CPA firms, you know, just people that we've met through local meetups or podcasts, just a slew of different efforts that we've, you know, put a lot of time and effort into. So
that's, I mean, if people have told me from day one that this business is all about finding deals and finding investors and, you know, finding investors, to me, that sounds like we need their money to get into the deal. But I really look at it as, Man, I wish somebody was presenting me with these opportunities when I was, you know, in another role and I was generating a ton of money, but my time was tied up with my business or with working for another company. And so they're really opportunities. And so presenting, you know, the opportunities to more people and getting more people involved. But you're always having to get new people involved. And I didn't really understand that until I first started. Like when I first started, I would talk to some of the more experienced syndicators and I was looking to get in as passives. And I kind of thought like, okay, well, the experienced syndicators, they're not going to even want to do business with me because they already have their investor database.
Mm-hmm.
But, right? But that's a
right.
That's
that's what you think initially. Yeah,
it's a false notion because what happens is a lot of people, they pull money out of stock market and now they want to do these real estate deals and they, you know, put their money into a bunch of deals and eventually they get tapped out because right. The deals are 5-year business plans and so they get tapped out and then the syndicator is still doing the next deal and so they've got to find new investors to get involved.
Exactly. I mean, you're always looking for additional investors to come on. And like you said, I mean, really, it's an opportunity for both sides. It's an opportunity on our side as a syndicator, you know, to bring more capital to the table and to do more deals. But on their side, you know, you can get them a really solid return in a lot of circumstances, a lot better than you might be able to get in the stock market or elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, like, you know, one of the things that, you know, high net worth individuals look for is, you know, I want to make money on my money, right? But they also mm-hmm. want capital preservation, right? They yep. want, if I'm going to invest in something, I want to know that it's solid. I want to know that, you know, my capital, you know, is going to be returned. It's not, you know, I'm rolling the dice. And I saw a chart, which, you know, floored me. Because Fannie and Freddie do probably, I don't know, 50% or more of the, you know, lending in the large scale multifamily space. And they have, you know, the most data available to them than anybody else because they do the most lending. So they have all the performance of all their properties across the entire country. And through good markets and bad markets and, you know, through up economies and down economies. And I saw a chart that showed it was either, I want to say it was 90-day delinquency. It was either 60 or 90-day delinquency for Fannie and Freddie. And they showed it, you know, for a huge time period right up to the Great Recession, okay? And their 90-day delinquency was like 25 basis points. So less than 1%. That's not, you know, defaulting on the loan. That's just, you know, delinquency. And during the Great Recession, 2008 to 2012, you know, that was, you know, a horrible time for a lot of people lost their homes. A lot of investments went bad. And so I expected that number to jump dramatically. And it did jump, but it went up to like 90 basis points.
Wow. So less than 1%.
Less than 1%. And that was delinquency, not defaults. So I'm, you know, like, okay, that shows the power. And I also think that, and you know, for my own benefit and also for the investor's benefit is that, look, if you're investing in a deal where the agencies are providing you with a loan on that deal, they have all that data. And if they approve the loan at the loan to value that you are presenting in your pro forma in your business plan, or they decide to even give you more proceeds, that to me is like another huge comfort. Like, look, we've got mm-hmm. Big Papa that's looking over our shoulders. They have way more data than we have, and they're not going to write that loan unless they're completely confident that the property, you know, can sustain it and it will be profitable.
Exactly. And they're, you know, they've become a little bit more conservative recently. And so I think, you know, especially now in the times that we're in, you know, if you can get approved, like you said, and get good loan proceeds, I mean, they have a lot of confidence in that deal performing.
Yeah. So look, you, What sacrifices did you have to make to get to where you are right now?
Yeah, so I would say sacrifices. I mean, the biggest one is time. I mean, I worked a full-time job, probably 45, 50 hours a week, and, you know, got into real estate and stuck, you know, 20, 30, 40 hours a week into that as well for, you know, a couple of years before I really laid off my full-time corporate position. So I would say, you know, time with family, leisure time, you know, something I still do to this day is, you know, I'll cut it off at about 5 o'clock PM. So that way I have 3-4 hours with my family in the evening. We'll put the girls to bed and then I'll go back to work for 2-3 hours if I need to. And that's not every day of the week, but, you know, I try to do that 3, 4, or 5 times a week, you know, just to get ahead of the ball and really progress our business. So, you know, I think you just cut out some of the things that you don't need. You know, we don't have any TV besides, you know,
you don't
Amazon Prime or whatnot on TV, which we'll watch a movie every week or two. But, you know, we cut that out. We cut out a lot of other minor items that we really didn't need in our lives.
That's very cool. We have not been able to do that. Nor do I know if I want to. But you know, when I asked that question to somebody, they actually answered it in a cool way. They said, and they had the same thing as you, is that they would work and then spend family time and then stay up at night. But they said, look, I don't look at it as a sacrifice. I looked at it as I'm investing in myself. I'm investing in myself and for the future, you know, the future of my own development and, you know, the wealth of my family and generations to come.
That is so true. And I think, yeah, it is really more a benefit than a sacrifice. And, you know, I think that plays into financial freedom. I mean, what is financial freedom worth to you and how important is it? And in our lives, it was extremely important. I mean, we're at the position now where, you know, really, if I didn't want to work for the rest of my life, I wouldn't have to. And I just think there's so much value in that.
Say it again.
Yeah. I mean, if I didn't have to work again, I wouldn't have to, you know, and I'd be able to maintain the lifestyle that we're currently living. And that's taken.
I'm sorry I'm interrupting, but so many people listening just want to be there, you know?
Yep.
I mean.
Yep. And it's just putting one foot in front of the other, you know? I mean, keep grinding, keep putting in the time, keep educating yourself, and you can get there. I mean, anyone can do it. So.
Why keep going if you are already there?
So, you know, a couple different reasons. You know, we're trying to teach our kids to really become entrepreneurs and, you know, push as much as they can throughout life, but at the same time, have a great life and enjoy it. Truthfully, I really enjoy putting together deals. So I enjoy acquiring deals. I enjoy, you know, trying to kick off really good returns to our investors. So it's really, I mean, at times, obviously, it's a job. It's, you know, it can be tough, but at the same time, it's very, very enjoyable.
Yeah, I think what I see with people that, you know, have say what you just said, they don't have to work, but they continue to go after deals and they enjoy it. And, you know, I think of a word as impact. Like, look, if you go off and you just sit, you know, on the beach or, you know, or you go out on the lake and you just with your family and you're just on the lake every day and you're not doing this business anymore, well, you're going to be impacting way less people. So by staying in the business and getting yourself out there and pushing yourself, getting uncomfortable, trying the next thing, you are putting yourself in a position to positively impact more people.
Exactly. And it's phenomenal how many people you can impact. I mean, you can impact other investors, help them along the way. You can impact your investors that passively invest with you. And I think most importantly, you can impact the tenants that live at your properties. I mean, you can, you know, do upgrades to the property, make the property more appealing for where they live, put in place, you know, certain community events in the community that you own and really build that sense of community. I mean, for instance, you know, when Christmas and Thanksgiving kicked around, we did, you know, free turkeys at a lot of our properties or pies. And it's just amazing at how much appreciation those tenants have for just those simple things. So like you said, you can really impact a lot of people if you keep going and keep striving to do more.
I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, most of the conversation typically is surrounded by investors and returns mm-hmm. for investors. And, you know, one of the, you know, side benefits really is you're impacting all the tenants on the property. And I remember walking across the parking lot and having a tenant stop me and be like, thank you. And I'm like, why? You know, and they're like, you know, I've been living here for like 12 years and like the paint looks so much better and the all new fencing. And like, I just feel like I live in a nicer place now. And
yeah,
you know, it put a smile on their face. And that was, you know, because I'm a business guy, I kind of think of it more in terms of the numbers and the returns. And so that was like, holy cow, you know, what we're doing is impacting all the lives of the people that live there.
It really is. And we had a similar situation, that first property or first syndication that we acquired in Wisconsin that had a ton of deferred maintenance. About 6 months into ownership, we got a letter from one of the tenants saying that she had went to the college that was nearby. She went to that college, but she went to the facility, to the admin department, and just made a comment to them at how we've upgraded the property, how she actually feels safe on the property, as to where, you know, before she didn't feel safe living on the property.
Wow.
And how she just really enjoyed what we did. And like you said, I mean, it just brings a smile to your face. It's just phenomenal.
Yeah, that's awesome. So Mike, what do you do outside of work for fun? Now, are you still wake skating?
You know, we do a lot of wake surfing. So surfing behind the boat, that's a huge, huge passion of ours. You know, getting the girls involved in that. We wakeboard, we snowboard, a little bit of skateboarding with my daughters, and we love to travel. I mean, we're traveling all the time. And, you know, the great thing about having a business partner like I do is, you know, you can cover each other when you're traveling or when you're checked out. And that really allows you to spend that quality time with your family and actually enjoy, you know, getting away. Whereas if you're a single man show, that can be tough to do.
Listeners, he's not just like saying this, like I see all of his posts. I mean, he is, he's out there, man. He's out there before like the kids go to school, he's out on the lake. Like he's out there when, you know, when it's cold, he's out on the lake, he's out skiing. He's an outdoors guy and he's brought his family out there too. So very cool. Look, your kids are very fortunate to be growing up with a dad and a mom who not only are teaching them about business, but, you know, are getting them out there and doing fun stuff in the world and in life. So I applaud you.
Appreciate that.
Absolutely. So if listeners want to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Yeah, so I'll give you a couple of ways. First, you can visit our website. It's granitetowersequitygroup.com. Or you can certainly email me directly. My email is mike@granitetowersequitygroup.com. And, you know, of course, you can check out our podcast as well. It's called The Keeping It Real Estate Show. Real estate has a dash in between it. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. We have a lot of fun with it.
Listeners, these guys are just good guys to know. I really like them as individuals and they have killed it, you know, in the last like 3 years. They just keep on adding to it and pushing the envelope. So I hope you enjoyed that one. Until next week, signing off.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you, and please share the show with a friend.